Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities to individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Chelsea M., who'll be telling us a little bit about her studies in disability life. So tell me a little bit about your studies.
Okay. So I'm in school for recreational therapy, or recreational coordination. My program basically focuses in on gerontology. So I learn a lot about the aging process, and I help develop and facilitate programs for people who have cognitive and physical and or physical impairments.
So what types of disabilities do you most commonly see in this work?
Well, I see like a lot of dementia, Alzheimer's, different behavioral, issues. And then as far as physical impairments go, there's a lot of persons who are in wheelchairs for different various reasons. Sometimes, they've had issues with their hips or their knees, or they just don't have the ability to walk any longer.
So you mentioned you help coordinate services there. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the work you've done specifically?
So I guess basically there's like five domains. The way we look at it in our program is that there's five domains that need to be calculated during programming, and the programs can, you know, be directed towards one of them or all five of them, or a couple of them, you know, whatever. But basically, we're looking to stimulate emotionally, socially, spiritually, intellectually, and vocationally. So the programs vary. I like to do a lot of arts-based programs. So I've done a lot of different painting programs, different creative movement programs, guided meditations, aromatherapy. I've done beanbag toss type of programming, racquetball. So a lot of things that I do, especially if I'm working with people who do have a cognitive impairment or physical impairment, I actually have to modify a lot of programs that, you know, an average person would do, you know, by themselves. For example, like if I wanted to play badminton, I would just go out and grab a racket and play badminton with a birdie. But something that I would do with a group of people that are, you know, in a wheelchair and have maybe that are maybe frail, is I would use a balloon instead of, you know, a birdie or a ball. And I would sit everybody in a smaller sort of circle, and then I would be standing up, kind of grabbing the balloon and like throwing it towards their rackets. So I'd kind of be like assisting and modifying, you know, daily activities that, you know, people would do.
So, are there any challenges in tailoring a program to someone with, say, a cognitive disability?
Yes, I definitely think there's some challenges there. You know, having to sort of simplify a program, I guess that's the right term, actually does impose a lot of challenges because you don't want to simplify it too much either. You still want to make sure that, you know, the people are getting something out of it, you know, that they are being stimulated enough, but you also need to make sure that it's not, they're not unable to do the activity as well. And you have to have a lot of patience and understanding, and you want to sort of, you know, you think of this idea and you're like, oh, this would be so great. You know, I don't know, just for example, like a card game or something, like, oh, this would be so fun. But then you start to, you know, go through the process of modification. And as you're doing it, you're like, oh, sometimes you can't even do it. Sometimes it's like, oh, no, you know what, this isn't really going to work. Like, it's a lot of trial and error as well. It's like, this isn't actually going to work. I can't make this. And then through that, you might end up thinking of another program that had nothing to do with what you're thinking of in the first place. But yeah, there's just a lot of thinking involved. Yeah, there's some challenges there.
To look at the converse side of things, in your efforts and your studies, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Yeah, I think so. Something that stands out to me is one specific time I can remember. I was facilitating a painting program, and this is why I love the arts so much. I find the arts can hit a lot of domains, like as I mentioned earlier, the emotional, spiritual, you know, physical. I feel like it hits a lot of those domains, and I also find it to be very calming and task focused. And I find with dementia clients specifically that it does something to their brain where they're able to just sort of focus on one thing, and I've noticed that behaviors change drastically. So for example, I had this one client who was having some problems that day. You know, she was feeling very agitated. She was having some anger, and, you know, she was being slightly aggressive, and, you know, nothing was really working. And then, you know, I put a paintbrush in her hand, and, you know, I got her a sheet of paper, and I had an image sort of printed out that was like hollow, so she could sort of paint inside of it. I finally got her painting anyway, and as soon as she started painting, it was like everything changed. Like, she was no longer aggressive, you know, she was no longer agitated, she was super focused on the painting. It started giving her these sort of, from what I noticed, warm feelings. She started talking about her painting, she started talking about paintings that she painted prior in her life, she started talking about happy memories, you know. So that was a really significant, noticeable change.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for equal access and equal inclusion for programs to be modified? So.
Message, I would say to, you know, just be aware that everybody, you know, is different, and that not everybody is able-bodied, able-minded, and that we need people who are need to, make those modifications and support them and make people feel like they have a safe space to do that. Like, you know, enforce that attitude amongst each other, you know, to look out for one another, and that to modify something is, maybe it possesses some challenges, but it's it's something that needs to be celebrated. You know, we're here to help each other out. Not tear each other down. So there should never be, there should never be the attitude of, oh, it's just so annoying that we have to modify. You know what I mean? There should be a positive attitude that's promoted. And that's the best thing that we could do as a community, is just, you know, bringing awareness to that and changing that attitude and that stigma, and just helping each other out.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kyle McLean from Calgary Alternative Support Services. So tell me a little bit about CAS.
Sure. CAS is a government-funded, not-for-profit agency that was founded in 1988 to address segregation and limited opportunity for individuals with disabilities. We provide support to individuals with disabilities, but have a bit of a focus on developmental disabilities. Many of the programs that we run support individuals with a wide variety of disabilities, ranging from mental and physical, all the way to psychological. We also operate in the homelessness sector, where we are currently operating two buildings that provide permanent supportive housing to individuals that have experienced chronic homelessness. It would probably come as no surprise to anyone that there's a high degree of overlap between homelessness, disability, mental health, and addiction. So we kind of see all of those things all together a lot.
So I'm guessing these buildings would offer some accessibility features for those who might have a mobility challenge?
Absolutely. The buildings were designed, or at least one of the two buildings was designed with accessibility in mind, and the other one we kind of made work to meet that end.
So
we also we have a wide variety of programs. So we run residential supports, day programs, supported employment, mental health supports, financial administration, systems navigation and advocacy, and more.
So when you mentioned one of the key areas was trying to work against the segregation of people with disabilities, you would think that issues like isolation and segregation would tend to cause mental health concerns, thus leading to a greater need for the work.
Absolutely. Disability can lead to limited opportunity, limited access, which can result in mental health concerns, which maybe can result in addiction, and all of these things go back and forth. Maybe the addiction results in mental health or possibly even disability, so they're all so interrelated.
So, with the addiction support you provide, do you offer things like helping a person get into a program to kick the habit?
Right. So that's probably part of our homelessness work would be to operate in a harm reduction model, for one, and also to help connect people with the resources that they might need. That's a big piece of what we do in terms of systems navigation and advocacy.
So what are some of the major challenges in the work you do?
Funding is always difficult. Being government-funded, not-for-profit, our budgets are tight and sometimes uncertain, I suppose. We get government contracts to provide services, but it's not always certain whether or not those contracts will be renewed. We do have our primary funder is persons with developmental disabilities, which is part of the Government of Alberta's Ministry of Community and Community and Social Services. So that's our kind of our core, but we have a variety of funders. I think we might be up to 20 funders at this point, so it's a lot to juggle. And so certainly the kind of uncertainty is a challenge for us.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with CAS, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, so many successes. seeing people eliminate their debt, achieve savings goals, achieve stable housing, converting employers into employers of choice, places that are truly inclusive. It really, we can change, can and have changed the landscape in a variety of ways. And it's so rewarding to see that work come to fruition.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why it is people with disabilities should be considered in things like equal housing, equal employment, what would you say?
Probably the two standouts for me are that people with disabilities have so much to offer. I think maybe sometimes people really focus in on the disability, but it's the ability that is what we're interested in. It's the things that people can do, and there might be some challenges in order to get there, but if we can overcome those challenges, we can take advantage of those opportunities and what those people can provide. The other thing that I think is really worth highlighting is that by making our communities inclusive, by supporting, providing for that opportunity to for everybody to engage, we build stronger, better communities. Accessibility efforts really benefit a wide variety of people. If something is wheelchair accessible, it's also accessible to mothers with strollers. And it's these kinds of knock-on effects, the unanticipated or unintended advantages that we get to experience as a result of that work, it just makes our communities better and stronger.
Although, to be fair, there's no such thing as anything that's 100% accessible.
The work will never be done, and we're always looking for new ways to improve, for sure.
So, what are the next steps for CAS?
We are kind of currently trying to beef up our administrative backend to create a greater infrastructure that will better facilitate growth. So right now we are very Calgary-centric. That's where all of our services and supports exist. But potentially through the development of a robust administration system, we will be better positioned for growth and maybe even growth into other regions potentially. So I'm a little bit biased being head of our administration team, so that's where my area of focus is, but I see that as creating new opportunity for us, and it has really been an area of focus and investment for us in recent years.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, absolutely.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Disability Studies Students Association is a small and tight-knit community of people who are passionate about and committed to representing and supporting disability studies students at the University of Windsor. The DSSA holds events on campus and in the community, like the annual Down Syndrome Day Walk, to raise funds for supporting organizations. If you would like to get involved or learn more, you can contact the Disability Studies Student Association directly at dssa@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information on this, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Chelsea M's disability studies and about CAS from Kyle McLean. Just a heads up, my friends, this next interview contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Things we apply for, you know, wheelchair ramps, and we do custom mattresses. If they require mental help, we can help with resources or pay for additional therapy for them.
whatever they need. We're a small organization, so we're kind of efficient, but we don't have any specified programs yet. That's kind of the reasons we've launched with Homewood Research, is to develop these programs to assist the veterans and their families as well.
So what types of needs do you most commonly see?
It's pretty diverse. As like I mentioned before, at the beginning it was mostly physical, so we were helping, you know, soldiers that had lost their legs with special ramps or mattresses that were helping them. But now at the PTSD level, they're looking for help with paying for additional therapies, or the soldiers that are in remote areas providing computers so that they can, especially during this time of COVID now, join in virtually. So we're looking into providing that, and that's also why the government can provide internet services in these remote areas would be very helpful to so many veterans as well.
So you raised an interesting point I wanted to ask about. When you primarily looked at physical stuff, you said something about providing special mattresses, was it?
Yep, there's customized mattresses, you know, wheelchair vans, chairs, whatever they need to make their life easier for them and their families.
What sort of mattress? Are we looking at something in terms of pain reduction? Or?
Yeah, like some require special, you know, Tempur mattresses, you know, because they've got the back issues with their legs after they're wearing their prosthetic devices for so long, or just, you know, maybe their side they want a hard mattress and their wife needs a soft mattress beside them, just things like that.
So what are some of the challenges the organization faces in supporting these soldiers?
Well, dealing with the Department of Defense, sometimes they're a little slow to react, and we'd like to do more. It's just getting the word out there to the veterans that we are here. And if we can help, you know, you just have to ask, and we'll see what we can do for you. I think, you know, they've done so much for our country. It's time that we do something for them, and we don't lose sight of, you know, their initial physical or mental injuries. They're not recoverable overnight. You know, they're long-term effects, and they need to be considered and taken into consideration as well.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with MCSF, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Well, I consider them all success stories. One of the very first ones we did was we gave a wheelchair van to a soldier who had been axed in the head in Afghanistan, and he hadn't been home in 2 years after so many surgeries. So his wife had no means to get him home, because when he initially left, they had a sedan, and by the time he was ready to come home, he needed a fully equipped, modified wheelchair van. So we gave him the keys to that, and that was very rewarding, because he was able to go home and spend Christmas with his 2-year-old daughter at that time. And then there's just been the appreciation and the soldiers, you know, thanking you so much for, like, your wheelchair ramp and just anything you give them. They're so appreciative. It's very rewarding.
So this soldier who was axed in the head, I imagine most of what he had to contend with was beyond the physical, that would leave its mental health mark.
Yes. Yes, he also required a lot of mental therapy as well, yes.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for work such as yours to support these soldiers?
I think we have to push the government to help these soldiers and veterans quickly, and remember that it's a long-term liability for them, and they need assistance. I think we need to cut down the bureaucracy. I know the soldiers and the veterans find it very frustrating to deal with them. They don't get answers right away. They're counselor or whatever, their contact in the government keeps changing. There's no fluidity all the time. So I think we need to streamline things a little bit better so they can get answers quicker and just cut the frustration out for them and their families, you know, with the multitude of paperwork that they also have to go through.
Given the number of returning soldiers, it's no wonder a backlog's been created, leading to the confusion you mentioned, and a lot of these issues.
I can believe there's a backlog, but I also think it's somewhat created by the government itself. So I think the whole streamlining thing needs to be addressed and reconfigured or something like that.
They start working their way through actual cases, they might actually be able to get to those who need more urgent support.
Yes, correct.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks.
You know, my friends, every once in a while a story comes along that leaves me absolutely floored. Hearing about that soldier who was axed in the head, it's really remarkable because that's not the sort of thing you typically hear of a person coming through. But this one did, and he was able to find the right support, which just goes to show in life that we can make all the assumptions we want, but we can never factor in human strength or the determination people have just to survive and to reach their best. And we as a society are the ones who get the privilege of standing beside them, building them up, reminding them they have a valuable contribution to make. And that doesn't matter where you come from, how old you are, what your circumstances may be. Fact is, we have it in us, every one of us does, to contribute, make the world a better place. I know I've said this before, but even a completely nonverbal person can make a difference in someone's life. They smile at someone having a rotten day at just the right moment and in just the right way. Maybe they'll even brighten things up for that someone. Might not be something we're consciously aware of, but it is making an impact. I maintain such an impact is possible for anyone, regardless of their condition. But we must always look for the exceptions in society. Yes, logic and even medical science may tell us it's impossible, it can't be done. And that can be very true until someone disproves it, till a precedent is set and someone beats those odds. Creates a whole new definition of how we look at disability and human strength in society. But the fact is, we can choose to accept that glass ceiling outlook. We can choose to listen to what others say and accept that there is no hope for tomorrow. Or we can work with what we have, try to build said hope. And try to build it not only for ourselves, but for others. Because that great sense of community in disability life also has a recognition component, to where a person with a condition can look and say, somebody else has done it. So, what am I able to do? Maybe you can't mirror it exactly, but what you can do is find greater strength and maybe even greater motivation within yourself. And I think that's what we're all looking for, my friends. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.